The following episode contains adult themes such as mutilation and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised. The Marquesa of Monferrato stepped gingerly through the grass on her afternoon stroll. The summer heat enveloped the palace garden so that every creature within moved with the drowsiness that precedes sleep. The Marquesa wandered aimlessly, enjoying the warm sun, the croak of idling bullfrogs, and the listless air of summer. As the wife of the most powerful man in Piemonte, her life was carefree. Marchese Lamberico was rich in almost all the ways a man of his stature could be, titles and wealth, land and loyalty, but with one exception. It was this exception that now weighed on the Marquesa's mind. They had no children. It's unknown why the authors of the world visit this punishment on worthy people, but there it was. Though they longed for a son or daughter, the Marquese and Marquesa had not produced any offspring to inherit their land and carry on their names. The Marquesa had hoped this stroll would make her forget this misfortune, but the dour thoughts wormed their way back into her mind. The inescapable melancholy weighed on her along with the warm, humid air. Succumbing to the sweet seduction of the atmosphere, she lay down in the cool grass and let her eyes flutter shut. Little did the Marquesa know, she was not alone in the garden. A small serpent wound its way through the grass, slithering ever closer to the sleeping noblewoman. The Marquesa slept so soundly that she did not stir as the serpent climbed her leg, nor did she notice as the snake slithered under her clothes and into her body. She didn't even awake as the scaly intruder climbed through her and nestled deep inside her womb. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every other Saturday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. This week, we'll be telling the first half of Biancabella and the Serpent, an Italian fairy tale first published in the 16th century. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of Biancabella and the Serpent features violent murder, mutilation, and implicit sexual themes. Please exercise caution for children under 13. The story of Biancabella and the Serpent first appeared in Le Piacevoli Notti di Straparola, or The Facetious Nights of Straparola, by Giovanni Francesco Straparola, published between 1550 and 1553. Considered by some to be the first European collection of fairy tales, the book is set on Murano, an island near Venice, known for their intricate glasswork. Straparola's book tells of 13 nights of partying on Murano, where the revelers entertain each other by telling fairy tales and folk stories, often ending the story with a riddle. In the original version, there are 74 total stories, all adapted by Straparola from folklore. Straparola's work would influence later folk writers such as Madame d'Aulnoy and the Brothers Grimm. The story of Biancabella and the Snake is the third fable on the third night of revelry, told by a woman named Loretta. She presents the story as a morality tale, a cautionary narrative of how women should treat each other lest disaster and misfortune befall them. Sometime after her nap in the garden, the Marchesa was both astonished and delighted to discover that she was with child. She rushed to tell her husband of the good news. She was still unaware of the snake that had found its way into her womb. 9 months later, the Marchese and Marchesa's daughter was born. The midwives in attendance were horrified at what they saw. The child had a live snake writhing around her neck. As the midwives hurriedly discussed what they should do, the snake suddenly slithered off the baby's neck and disappeared. The parents were relieved that their daughter had come to no harm. Curiously, they found that the snake had left behind an exquisite necklace of pure gold. Deciding to see this as a good omen rather than a bad one, they accepted the gift and put all worries from their minds. They named their daughter Bianca Bella. It was a name that would become known throughout the kingdom. Bianca Bella grew up the happiest of princesses, beloved by all in the palace and by the citizens in the surrounding countryside. She soon developed a reputation for being generous of heart, and it didn't hurt that she was also exceptionally beautiful. One day, the 10-year-old Bianca Bella and her nurse entered the palace garden. The little girl was spellbound by the nature all around her. It was her first time in this wondrous corner of the castle. She gasped and turned to her nurse.
"What is this place?"
she asked. "It is your mother's garden," the nurse patiently replied. Neither the child nor the nurse were aware that it was also the site of Bianca Bella's strange conception. With her nurse's permission, Bianca Bella ran about the garden, playing in the flowers. Meanwhile, exhausted from looking after the young princess, the nurse sat down under a tree to rest. As her eyes drooped with sleep, she lost track of the girl, and in doing so, she set into motion a dark series of events. Having been worn out by her playtime, the 10-year-old sat in the shade of a tree. She had hardly settled upon the ground when she heard a rustling sound. Bianca Bella leapt to her feet in fright upon seeing that a large snake was slithering toward her from across the garden. She was just about to call for her nurse to help her when the serpent spoke. The snake reared up in front of her, hissing, saying,
"Fear not."
Shocked, Bianca Bella could just barely respond, whispering,
"Who are you?"
"I am your sister, born upon the same day. I am called Samaritana."
Bianca Bella hesitated, but remembering her manners, chirped,
"Pleasure to meet you."
The 10-year-old girl was confused by the talking snake, but listened intently to what the reptile had to say next.
"Do what I bid you,"
said Samaritana.
"Exactly what I tell you, and you will be happy all of your days. Disobey me, and you will fall into wretched ruin."
Samaritana told Bianca Bella to return to the garden alone the following day with containers, one of milk and one of fine rose water. With that, the serpentine sister disappeared. Bianca Bella's stomach was churning with confusion. She knew what everyone would say to her if she tried to tell them about the talking snake, so she kept what she saw to herself. But she wrestled with what to do next. Dare she obey its orders? Dare she disobey? It seemed foolish to trust a slithering snake, but then again, it claimed to be her sister. Surely she could trust family, even if she did not understand how it was that they were related. The following day, the Marchesa noticed that Bianca Bella was crestfallen. And so the mother asked of her daughter, "What's the matter, Filita? Why look you so melancholy?" Bianca Bella stammered out to her mother,
Oh, I cry your mercy, Mother, but nothing is amiss. I merely wondered whether I could bring a vessel of milk and a vessel of rose water to the garden.
Her mother laughed at such a childish request. It was such a silly thing to seem so worried about. So the Marchesa immediately dispatched the containers to the garden. The 10-year-old girl went to the garden. There, patiently awaiting her, was Samaritana. The snake's scaly length was coiled around the two vessels, her head raised expectantly. Biancabella waited anxiously, wondering what it was her strange sister would ask of her. Finally, after what seemed like an endless silence, Samaritana ordered that Biancabella undress. Initially, the request shocked her. She had only just met this strange creature. She did not feel comfortable getting naked in front of it. But as she stared at its muscular coils and sharp fangs, she thought better of disobeying it. With sweaty palms, Biancabella removed her dress and stood naked before the serpent. She glanced around, feeling exposed. She worried that someone from the palace would intrude and find her nude with the snake, but no one appeared. They were alone. The serpent then commanded that she step into the vessel of milk. Biancabella did as she was told. She nearly slipped as she stepped fully into the vessel. The milk lapped at her ankles, and she clutched herself, still feeling quite vulnerable. The snake followed, disappearing underneath the milky surface. Biancabella yelped when she felt the serpent slither up her knee and spread the milk all over her youthful, naked skin. The scales scraped and tickled. Goosebumps lined Biancabella's legs. Though still uncomfortable, she felt a little thrill at what was happening. Her heart began beating faster and faster. Samaritana continued to coil around Biancabella, licking her in every place that had even the slightest imperfection. The forked tongue caused shivers to pass through her body. Once she had finished, the snake uncoiled herself from Biancabella and ordered her to bathe in the rose water. Biancabella did so, and as she tossed the sweet water over her body, the feeling of cold scales and a forked tongue vanished and was replaced with an invigorating sense of new life. Samaritana ordered Biancabella to dress herself. The serpent then said,
"Remember, do only what I tell you and you will prosper. If you do not, you will fall into wretched ruin."
Biancabella, feeling refreshed and radiant, eagerly agreed to her magical sister's command. The snake once again bade her tell no one of what had transpired between them and vanished into the tall grass. Upon Biancabella's return to the palace, her mother was astonished that her already beautiful daughter had become transformed and was now impossibly even more beautiful, almost supernaturally so. She asked her daughter what had caused such a transformation in her, but Biancabella was silent and would not tell her. That evening, Biancabella's chambermaids were readying her for dinner. The Marchesa was still in attendance and still astounded by her daughter's newfound radiance. The room fell silent when, as a handmaiden passed a comb through Biancabella's hair, all manner of precious stones fell out from her locks. Pearls, rubies, amethysts, all scattered across her bedroom floor. The women were astounded, and even more so when Biancabella washed her hands and beautiful roses, violets, and cherry blossoms appeared in the basin. Biancabella's heart soared. She felt that she had been right to trust her serpentine sister, but in her reverie, she had already begun to forget the snake's final warning. If she did anything that the snake didn't tell her to, then she would be doomed to wretched ruin. When we return, Biancabella is tested when she's presented with a dashing suitor. Now, back to the story. Biancabella was born under strange and magical circumstances. Her mother was impregnated by a snake, and she herself emerged from the womb with the snake around her neck. Having made a secret deal with her serpent sister, Samaritana, Biancabella was now more beautiful than ever. Her mother rushed to tell her father of Biancabella's transformation. The Marchesa rushed to tell her husband the news, crying, "You will not believe it. Our daughter is blessed. She is the fairest girl that has ever lived." The logical Marchese replied, "We knew that already, amore mio."
"Ascoltame," his wife declared. "When one runs a comb through her hair, precious gems appear. Her hands cause flowers to grow in water. I would not believe this if I had not beheld it with mine own eyes."
Now, Lamberico was a worldly man who was not easily swayed by tall tales. He presumed his wife was exaggerating their daughter's graces. However, he decided to humor her, and so they went to Biancabella's chamber together. The Marchese and Marchesa entered their daughter's chamber. True to the Marchesa's word, Biancabella's hair still spilled precious stones when combed, and flowers still sprouted in the water she touched. The Marchese was astonished. He took his wife and daughter in his arms, saying,
"We are all blessed. For the longest time we could not have a daughter, and now that she is a woman, she is no mere girl. She is divine."
The Marchese then proclaimed that when Biancabella was old enough to be married, no man on earth could possibly prove himself worthy. Biancabella secretly worried when she heard this. Would he never allow her to marry? Would she be doomed to a life of loneliness because of her beauty? However, as she grew further into her beauty, the word started to spread. Very soon, suitors were lining up by the dozens to win the hand of the most beautiful woman in the world. Kings and princes, counts and viscounts, all manner of royalty and nobility flocked to Monferrato as if it was the Holy Land. One by one, Biancabella's father dismissed them. None were worthy of his gem-haired beauty. How could any of them be? Her wealth was endless, her beauty unparalleled. Biancabella was made uneasy by all of the attention. So many men were clamoring for her hand that she did not know what to do. She even had a passage built to connect the garden to her bedchamber, so she did not have to risk the eyes of the public when she wanted a moment's respite. But even though she avoided most of the suitors, eventually her curiosity got the better of her, and from a secret window, she started to spy on the negotiations. She was hidden there when the latest of the suitors presented himself to her father. The man in question was Ferrandino, the King of Napoli. Not only did he possess vast lands and a significant title, but he also had a brave and courageous character. As Biancabella watched, hidden, Ferrandino boldly presented his case to her father. The Marchese asked,
"What separates you from the hundreds of princes I have turned away from my daughter?"
The handsome king replied,
"None of them are going to marry her."
Biancabella's heart took a little leap as she heard this fearless and passionate reply. Her father inquired further, asking,
"I see that you have bravado and a kingdom, but how can I trust you will treat my daughter with care?"
Ferrandino, ever confident, replied,
"For my queen, I need someone that is greater than every other woman in the world. I have an army, land, a palace, and all of it is hers, as well as my heart, which will not love anything short of utter perfection. The Marchese summoned Biancabella to meet this man. Though a renowned military leader, the king's bravado melted the second she appeared before him. "You are no woman," he gasped. "You are a being of the heavens." He dropped down to a knee and proposed before he even remembered to say his name. At a loss for words, Biancabella gasped out a yes. Her heart beat even faster, and tears of happiness flooded her eyes. This was more than she could have hoped for. Her father approved the match, and the two kissed for the first of many times. As she withdrew from the sweetest embrace she had yet known, Biancabella suddenly had a horrible thought. Samaritana did not say anything about a husband. I agreed to something without asking her first. Is this breaking her rules? After spending time with her fiancé, Biancabella excused herself, saying that she had business of her own to attend to. Once she had gotten away from her parents and betrothed, she opened the secret passage in her room and rushed to the palace gardens. Having closed the door behind her, she desperately set about searching for her sister. She shouted,
"Samaritana, I have something to talk to you about."
She searched and searched, continuing to whisper the name as if the incantation would summon her sister to her. She spent hours searching under every blade of grass for her scaly kin, but the serpent was nowhere to be found. Tears falling down her cheeks, Biancabella sank to her knees. Had she just violated her agreement with her sister? Was she now doomed to fall into wretched ruin? She wept for a long time until she had no more tears to give. Finally, she stood up, readying herself to see her beloved again. Back in her chamber, she washed her face, throwing aside the sweet flowers that bloomed as she did so. Once every sign of her tears had been washed away, she returned to her family. The marriage was the social event of the age, paid for with gems combed from Biancabella's hair. The entirety of the kingdom showed up for the ceremony. There was music and dancing, feasts, wine by the barrelful, and white doves to celebrate the happiest union of all time. But even amidst all of this, Biancabella could not be completely happy, as the warning of her sister still gnawed at the back of her mind. After their marriage, Ferrandino hastened to bring his new wife back to Napoli. Before leaving her childhood home, Biancabella searched the garden once more for Samaritana. Finding nothing, she returned and said a heartfelt goodbye to her family. Though sad, she was still excited to start a new life with her husband. They set off from the far northeast of Italy in Monferrato, all the way by sea to Napoli in southern Italy. The ship ride south was enchanting, as Biancabella had seen little of the world outside of Monferrato. It took her a while to get used to the rocking of the boat. However, she hardly had time to appreciate the scenery. She and Ferrandino could not keep their hands off of each other, consumed with love and desire. They spent the whole of the voyage in his cabin, so that the ship's rocking was only partially due to the waves. As she lay next to her new husband in their bed, the words of her sister came to her unbidden.
"You will fall into wretched ruin."
She shook her head as if to clear away cobwebs and gripped her husband tighter. They were greeted in Napoli with an abundance of revelry,
It seemed the entire kingdom was celebrating the wedding, as the feasting, dancing, drinking, and carousing lasted for days. Ferrandino led Biancabella into their new palace, an intricate and glorious home with ornate rugs, crystal chandeliers, and windows that reached higher than the tallest towers of Monferrato. The king took her into their bedroom and showed her the softest feather bed that she had ever laid upon. Unable to keep their hands off of each other for a second longer, the king and queen fell on each other, kissing and tugging at their clothes. Suddenly, a tiny cough startled them out of their embrace. Ferrandino leapt to his feet, and Biancabella struggled to get up after him. Standing in the doorway was a skeletal woman with deep-set eyes and a wolfish smile. She was flanked by two younger women who were so withered and wretched that Biancabella did not realize at first they were people. She said,
"You didn't come to see me when you returned, Filio."
The king apologized and introduced Biancabella to his stepmother. The woman curtsied a little too deeply to her new daughter-in-law. Biancabella simply nodded at her. The queen mother said,
"Ferrandino told us so much about you in his letters."
Biancabella attempted to greet them, but all they did in return was snarl at her. The queen mother left the two lovers, followed by her daughters. Being of good heart, Biancabella accepted the woman's kind greetings at face value, not seeing the daggers hidden in her smile. In reality, the queen mother was seething with resentment. She had long been scheming to marry her ugly daughters off to the king, but they were not only hideous, their souls were rotten to the core. Every last one of her plans turned to ashes when Ferrandino had ridden off to Monferrato and married Biancabella. Now, to be sharing the same palace residence as her new daughter-in-law, the stepmother was consumed with the kind of jealousy that only afflicts those who are truly empty and evil inside. The stepmother itched to plot Biancabella's downfall, but she knew she could not. Though Ferrandino was a sweet and loving husband, he was a ruthless warrior and merciless to his enemies. If the queen mother were to move against his beloved wife, she would be doomed. As long as Ferrandino was around, his stepmother was powerless to harm Biancabella. One night, Biancabella asked her husband,
"Does the queen mother not like me?"
Ferrandino replied, "Of course she does. She's only protective of me since father died. Worry not, my love. She will get used to you, and all will be well." Biancabella thought she must be imagining things. She would ask the queen mother to tea and talk with her, and soon they would be the best of friends. The next day, she received a delightful piece of news from her nurse. She was with child. The new bride was filled with joy. Maybe Samaritana was not upset after all. Maybe this new life would work out. However, Ferrandino and Biancabella's honeymoon was soon cut short in dramatic fashion. The king of Tunis was jealous of Ferrandino's marriage to Biancabella and had begun to march his troops into Ferrandino's kingdom. Determined to protect his new wife and unborn child, Ferrandino bid a hasty goodbye and rallied his soldiers to battle. He left the care of Biancabella to his stepmother. She had been showing her daughter-in-law the greatest of hospitality, so the king had no reason to suspect her true intent. Next, the queen mother makes her move. Now back to the story. Biancabella was in love with her new husband, Ferrandino, the king of Napoli. They were even expecting a child, but Ferrandino's jealous stepmother was about to destroy their happy new life.
After Ferrandino's departure, Biancabella spent most of her time in the palace, addressing the concerns of the kingdom. Whenever she had a spare moment, she would go to her own palace gardens to relax. She grew flowers with her hands and made the scenery greener and more beautiful than ever. But it still did not compare with the garden where she first bloomed into womanhood. Going to the garden started to make her sad and nostalgic, so the queen spent more time in her bedchamber, relaxing as her stomach grew larger with child. She decorated these rooms with flowers and precious gems to make them more beautiful. One day, as Biancabella sat for a painter, the queen mother appeared in the doorway. The old crone glazed her words with a fake sweetness that only her rotten heart could manage. She greeted her new daughter and asked her how she was feeling. Biancabella replied,
"Truly, I begin to feel restless. I find both too much and too little time for recreation."
"Is that so?"
oozed the stepmother.
"I seem to recall Ferrandino telling me you did love your garden back in Monferrato."
The remembrance of her sister still fresh, Biancabella paused.
"You will fall into wretched ruin,"
echoed in her head. She could only reply to her stepmother with a nod. The stepmother seized this opportunity and offered to lend some of her loyal guards to take Biancabella to a secluded part of the nearby forest where she could relax. Biancabella accepted the seemingly generous offer. She dismissed the painter to finish another day. With a snap of her fingers, the stepmother summoned two of her best men. What Biancabella did not know was that these two retainers were not guards. They were professional assassins, and the stepmother had paid them handsomely to murder Biancabella and bring back the bloody proof. The Queen of Napoli was whisked away to the woods, to a place out of earshot from the city. She had been making pleasant conversation with her entourage, not knowing that the two guards were really two paid killers waiting to attack. As they rode along the wooded path, she noticed one of the retainers nod to the other. Before she could react, the second man grabbed her hair and threw her from her horse. Biancabella frantically crawled away, clutching her belly as the guards dismounted. One of the men drew a dagger, and the other produced a wicked axe.
"You will fall into wretched ruin,"
she thought. Her sister's warning had finally caught up to her. How could she have been so foolish as to think she could live however she pleased without consequence? She begged for mercy, crying out,
"Sirs, why do you do this?"
The sight of this beautiful woman in distress gave the guards pause. They couldn't help but give her an answer. One of the guards said,
"It is not for hate of you, your grace, but for need of coin, and your head will fetch quite a sum."
She continued to beg, asking them whether they loved their king. They replied that they would love him more if he paid, as well as his mother. She felt the bottom drop out of her stomach. Her stepmother-in-law had ordered her death. She said,
"Good sirs, please have pity on me. A straniera who only wishes to be good to all the people of Napoli."
She continued to plead for her life. With their weapons raised, the trained killers began to weep. They had taken many a life, and for some reason, this helpless queen held them in a spell. Struggling against their own feelings, the two men seized her by the arms. They whispered to each other that they must bring some proof of the girl's demise. Without proof, the queen mother would have their heads. Biancabella let out shuddering breath after shuddering breath. Crying, she begged the men to spare her and lie to their employer. Finally, the assassins made their decision. Still blinking back unwilling tears, the man with the axe hacked off Bianca Bella's hands. She screamed and begged while the one with the dagger plucked her eyes from their sockets. They could not bring themselves to do any further harm to the queen. They left with their hearts heavy. Still yelling with pain and fear, Bianca Bella lay upon the forest ground, blind, without hands. Though she had her life, Bianca Bella had never before felt more lifeless. What to a pair of killers was mercy, to her was the cruelest fate of all. Back at the castle, the assassins presented the eyes and hands of Bianca Bella to her stepmother and proclaimed the queen dead. Overjoyed, the queen mother set about the next phase of her plan. She quickly spread two false stories, one that the queen was suffering from a horrific illness and had miscarried her child. The second was that the king's ugly stepsisters had perished. Though Bianca Bella was a new addition to Napoli, the people had already been so taken with her that the news of her sudden stillbirth and sickness drew great sympathy from the masses. While the citizenry mourned the death of the infant, the stepmother had one of her daughters pose in Bianca Bella's bed, claiming that the illness had so withered and wasted her body that she was now ugly and weak. News from the front had finally returned, and with it, the king himself. Ferrandino and his army had deftly defeated the Tunisian forces. While making the long trek back from war, the king was looking forward to a warm welcome home from his true love. What he found instead was tragedy. His bride, the most beautiful woman in the world, was now withered and hideous to look upon. He cried out, rushing to her side, asking, "What has happened to you?" His stepmother arrived, saying, "It will pass, but it has left her quite weak." Initially not believing that the woman in bed could possibly be his wife, Ferrandino ordered her handmaids to comb the fake Bianca Bella's hair, knowing that if it were her, precious jewels would fall thence. But upon running a comb through the ugly woman's hair, no gems came forth, but only massive worms that had been feeding on her flesh. Confused, Ferrandino had the attendants bring forth basins of water, which would surely bloom with flowers once the queen dipped her hands in. No flowers grew, but the water turned a deep orange brown. Soon it became so rank with stink that many of the attendants fled the room retching. Thinking quickly, the queen mother comforted her stepson by telling him it was the wasting illness that had robbed his love of her abilities and grace. Unconvinced, he left the chamber distraught, shunning any and all company. Meanwhile, in the woods, alone and blind, the pregnant Bianca Bella started to feel pangs of unbearable pain in her abdomen. She screamed as loud as she could into the oppressive blackness, but not a soul responded to her desperate cries. She was in agony for hours, pushing until her child came forth. She lay there in relief for a long time, before realizing that she could hear no crying. Feeling around with her bloody stumps, she could find no child between her legs. All she found was a slimy, scaly snakeskin. Tears came from her empty sockets, the fresh wounds stinging with the salt. She lay there and wept. "So this is what Samaritana warned of," she thought.
I am betrayed and alone. I will never see or touch my husband again. My child was lost, and nobody is here to help me." She yelled into the relentless dark until her voice grew scratchy and hoarse. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, she thought she heard a deep voice in the distance. She thought blearily that perhaps Ferrandino had finally come for her. She felt muscular arms wrap around her. "Wait," she thought, "these aren't Ferrandino's arms." She struggled and lashed out with her stumps. The mysterious arms merely gripped her tighter. Then came a deep, accented voice. It said, "Worry not, Signora. You're safe now." Biancabella started laughing in spite of herself. She had seemingly gone mad. She kept laughing into the dark as the stranger carried her further into the oppressive and merciless forest. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the conclusion to the story in which Biancabella searches for her serpent sister to aid her in a quest for justice. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me in 2 weeks for the end of this dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Isabella Way, and Joel Stein. This episode of Tales was written by Matthew Teamstra, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.